Hi, everyone. I have not done a solo episode in a while. I've only really done one since this iteration of the podcast. The only other previous iteration was when I was just recording myself on Zoom and or on YouTube, and some of those are available. Some of them are not. And the universe conspired to guide me here once again. I received some feedback that some people appreciated the solo episodes, but it's, to be blunt, as I often say, this is really more about me. I do a solo episode when I feel I have something to say. And, you know, I use a lot of that lofty language too about doing things to be of high service and for the world and all that. And I believe that wholeheartedly. But it starts by serving the self. It starts by, in some ways, it starts and ends that way. You know, I have a truth to unfold, and I hope, I trust that it's of service to others because it's in alignment and in integrity for me, but I don't bank on it. You know, if we bank on that, if we hold too tightly to what's going to serve others, what do they need? What do people need? You know, good luck. Good luck with that. Good luck with that mission. You know, I just have something to say, so I'm going to say it, and I don't even really know what that is. I just know when something's bubbling up. There are some feelings getting stirred up in me, and I have created some spaces in which I can share, and I make it available for others. And I trust that if you're listening, that you'll get something out of it. Maybe not, and that's okay too. But that's kind of that's my way these days. Is to show up for me and trust that will trickle outward and serve the higher good, serve you in some way. And so that's what today will be about. Maybe some familiar themes, if you know me or have listened to me before, and maybe some new content, maybe some new areas I haven't talked about so explicitly and feel ready to now. We'll see. How this goes. I will start with just some, I guess you could call them updates, although I guess they're just really feelings that I have right now that I'm working through, some circumstances that have changed, that have emerged in my life. There's quite a lot unfolding. It's quite a groundless time, which it has been for the past few years, but there's been ebb and flow. There's been more stability in the past year, more settling into where I live and in the burgeoning community I'm a part of. And slowly but surely, the universe at large has been inviting what I can feel are the seeds of a new leap, another leap for me. I don't really know where it's going. I know that I'm going to move again, probably somewhere local here in Southern California. And I have some idea of some of the things I'm stepping into. Some of it is pretty out there. Maybe I'll get into a little bit of it here. But yeah, man, it's just been such an interesting journey. There are, you know, once we start to give freedom to all the parts of us and we start to open up to parts of us we did not even know existed, it gets pretty wild because we're pretty complex human beings. At least I appear to be. I won't speak for everyone else, but I appear to have a lot of different parts, and it is amusing, actually. How I can show up differently for different people. And I, you know, growing up, I did that to a fault. I was really good at being a kind of chameleon character. I knew how to please others. And then a lot of the times I would consciously choose not to out of rebellion and desire to hold my ground and keep my truth, even though I didn't know what that was. But I did a lot of people pleasing too, because that's in some ways how I emotionally survived, how I felt the need to emotionally survive. And it, you know, it takes a little time for all of us to uncover the ways that we're doing that. So I would adapt to circumstances and to people, to relationships, to romantic relationships or friendships. I would change. And I think people who got to know me well enough would see through the masks, but, you know, there were some parts of me that no one saw, until now or until the last few years, or that I didn't even allow myself to see. You know, it's there are layers, so many layers. It's turtles all the way down. Keep pulling out off layers and layers and layers. So that was a sort of a trauma conditioning, if we want to use that language. And yet when we start to get free of the expectations, you might see that there are just different parts, and that I may be guided to show up slightly differently, not to please others, but just because different people, places, and things elicit different energies out of you, elicit different parts of you, you know, different passions, different sides of your personality, of your nature. Your nature doesn't have to be just one singular thing. I'm not meant to just do one singular thing in this life. It's pretty clear on some level that a lot of what I do is in the area of what I would call the healing arts, but that's pretty broad spectrum, right? You know, what all can be folded into the healing arts, or just the art of creation in general, because all creativity can be healing, can be of service. And so in some ways, it's just continuing to follow the thread or pull the thread of my highest vision, of my light, of my passion, which is still unfolding. So now it's a little or significantly less about people pleasing and more just about where I'm guided to show up. And recently I've just been invited to see the parts of me that have been showing up or held on to different communities that I may be changing, that I may be changing in relation to. And as I left the clinic I was working at as a more traditional clinical psychologist, and then as I left the place I was living, you know, I let a lot of things go, let some relationships go, and then circled back around to some and did my best to mend any wounds within myself around that, which I feel I've navigated pretty well. And though one of the communities that I'm still a part of, though I almost put that in quotes, I would say adjacent to or have like very cursory involvement in now, is what I refer to as the mind-body community, the TMS community, PPD, etc. Some of the listeners here have probably found me through that avenue. But what I've noticed is I just get further and further away from it, sort of. It's interesting because, I mean, I just had Howard Schubiner on the podcast, so like, you know, I still love having certain people that I really respect and admire on here and to have these conversations. And to me, that is almost different because that's like these individual relationships, it feels like. And in individual relationships, then you get to explore people if they're willing. And if someone's willing to come on this podcast, then typically they're at least a little bit open to exploring some of what I have to offer. Although, you know, and actually, one client gave me some nice feedback that they felt I tend to show up the same, regardless of the guest, which is nice because I think that that's my intention. And yet, I don't even really know if that's true because, you know, I always intend to meet the moment, right? There are things that I would talk about with some guests that I just wouldn't with others. And it's, you know, certain things just feel more natural, organic. And I know intuitively what's going to be appropriate, what's just going to feel out of the bounds of what would create an emotionally safe and inspiring conversation. Because those episodes, they're not, I mean, I take up plenty of space. And I'm comfortable doing that, but it's not really about me. It's about them. exploring their views, their perspectives, and I get to poke at it a little bit and inject my own truth, my own curiosities, and you know, I do a lot of that intuitively wherever I'm guided to go, and to serve them, to shine a light on them, and I'll say it here, to serve listeners, to serve the world. That is certainly part of it. So it's not all about me. in part, it's about me because this project came from, I guess I could say it came from me, but it really is channeled information. It came from the part of me that is connected to source wisdom that sort of invited this in, and I was willing to take action and create it. So I wouldn't say I show up exactly the same. I'd say I show up with the same intention when I interview people on here. And I guess when I'm doing, you know, in this moment, as it's just me, I'm setting a similar intention, but I guess it's more about shining a light on me. There's no one else that I'm shining a light on here. So I am probably a bit, I mean, definitely a bit freer in my language here. And that's okay. I think, you know, it's okay to use different language, right? It doesn't mean we're denying our truth, right? Like, I think earlier on in my path, I was had my heels dug in. I felt I needed to cut a lot of cords. And so I used very strong language and I did not adjust it. And it was not nuanced. And that was very challenging for my family, for my friends. It also because I've had this conversation recently. It's not just about what you say, it's how you say it, obviously. So I say a lot of the same things now that I said earlier in my journey, but I do it with less reactivity, with less insecurity. And when there's insecurity, there's often more, at least for me, there can be more fire, more anger in some ways, more defiance. Like, you need to say something defiantly in order to be heard. Otherwise, you're going to crumble, because it's underneath that, it's a very insecure and groundless time, which is precisely what was my truth. And it was the first time I started speaking about anything in the spiritual realm, really, like, to anyone else aside from like my mother or like the various healers that I'd met with. But even then, that was more a process of listening. I didn't really have any truth of my own. I just having experiences. And then I started to write and I started to speak, and it was different. It was different. It was different than anyone around me, any of my peers, anyone I went to grad school with, any of my, you know, people I was working with. So there was definitely some fire and some reactivity that came across through me. And that's also just related to a bit of my own conditioning that goes back a long way. Challenging authority and being very sensitive to not being seen and feeling different. So I was leaning right into that because, you know, our trauma is also deeply related to our mission, right? Two sides of the same coin. There's the shadow side and then there's the light side, and leaning into the difference, leaning into charting a path. But it's a little different now in that I don't feel so attached to this identity of being an outcast, of being on the edge. You know, I used to think that was pretty cool. And I do. I do. It's cool to be out on the edge, out on the front lines or whatever. And I can continue to hear that message from my guides that is my path. I'm not really, not necessarily here to just fold into place. I'm here to speak truth, but it's my truth. And I don't have this grand vision of everyone adopting it or, you know, it's just important. It's just clearly important for me to do, for me to be healthy, for me to live a joyous and free life. Like that's really just the thing. So if certain communities aren't receptive to it, I'm not like digging my heels in needing to be the fighter. And this, maybe this is sounding vague, but I'll hone in on something that happened recently, which is just from this mind body community. You know, I don't really write that much. There's this listserv, you know, for those who are unfamiliar, it's in some ways, it feels like the, what would you call it? the headquarters, or like the, not really, because there's the PPDA Association. There's lots of sort of higher up organizational structures, but it has felt like a crux, a home of sorts for clinicians in this area to converse, to share ideas, to share research, etc. In some ways to promote yourself, but you know, whatever, that's not really my thing. I've been a part of that for a while. Close to maybe 9 years or so. I joined it when I was in grad school, when I was still sick. Still really sick, and I was really had a lot of unprocessed trauma and everything, but I was in grad school and I was pursuing it, so I was able to get invited. I believe it was John Strax who, you know, kind of, you need to like get invited by someone, and I think he was the one who invited me in after I'd worked a little bit with him. And I don't know, even from the beginning, I probably was pushing some boundaries, but it wasn't really spiritual content. It was more like, I just, you may get the idea of my personality at this point. I was never really one to just fall in line. Probably even when you were just supposed to literally line up in a line in like second grade, I probably didn't even do that, but... But in the more metaphorical way here, you know, there's just a lot of division within psychology. There's a lot of division within theoretical orientations, and even within an orientation. Take psychoanalysis or psychodynamic theory and attachment theory, which is what I was trained in and interested in. I mean, I would just argue with people about that. Also, I think it was, you know, the mind-body community, at least in the way that I'm referring to it, that's a pretty vague term, but specifically the community that evolved from John Sarno's work. You know, it was really interesting because it was my first exposure to a true integration of Western medicine and Western psychology. You know, in grad school, they would just basically talk about health psychology as something where, like, as a psychologist, you could like support doctors. It almost felt like they were saying like psychologists could be like nurses to doctors, like emotional nurses, like teaching doctors about emotions, which I was like, that's doesn't sound interesting to me. But it did feel like it was this like paradigm of like, doctors are not super, you know, emotionally intelligent, so we as the psychologists are going to help navigate this realm. And to some degree, that is still true. Like, I think that, but I think the integration has been happening more, and doctors, those who are willing, have taken it upon themselves to educate themselves a bit more. The truth is that education in the emotional realm is actually a personal journey. It's not simply reading a text. But I think many doctors have been opened, probably just through the sheer experience of struggling with patients, because patients come in and talk about trauma, they talk about stress. And so if doctors want to be equipped to address those needs, they're going to have to adapt and open up to that. But that's all to say that was really the only exposure I had. And there was almost this, I can't think of the word, but there was this resistance to anything as a psychologist, anything that had a medical diagnosis or a label. It's like, you know, no, you got to send that to a, no, you can't address that. There's ethics around that. There's risk, et cetera, whatever. But this community, through my own personal suffering, was one of the first that was willing to just open up the discussion around like, what is medical? What is psychological? What is in the body? What is in the mind? And now obviously the world of trauma has evolved so much, so rapidly, that like many people acknowledge that it's a thin line, that trauma is in the body. Emotions can be in the body. Now those things are debated, but there's a lot of psychological practices, at least, that invite that in and address that and have comfort working with it. But when I was in grad school, that was still, it wasn't something I was learning about. So my own experience guided me to it, and then to this field and to this listserv. So it was exciting, and I felt like, and probably was, a bit more educated in the more deeply psychological realms, psychoanalysis, psychodynamics, attachment. You know, now there's lots of people are very educated around that. And that's amazing that it's just become so integrated and it's really just through that world of trauma that it's become such an integrative topic to learn about. But at the time, I think, you know, people were still just gaining, maybe medical doctors, a more cursory understanding of it. You know, because the truth is a lot of Sarno's work was based in a lot of what Freud said, but, you know, he came at it through this medical doctor lens in the 70s and was using slightly different language, quite similar, actually. And that became the access point for doctors, et cetera. I think I was just, whatever, pushing back, finding my own way in. I think I just wanted to contribute. And at the time, that was my way of being heard, was kind of arguing with people, frankly, whether it was peers, supervisors, people on this listserv. But it was still within the realm of what was considered acceptable. You know, it was still within Western healing, within the frame of Western healing. And then over time, you know, my journey started to change pretty dramatically, and my language started to change pretty dramatically, and that became interesting for my family, it became interesting for my friends, became interesting for colleagues. And it definitely became interesting on this listserv because I started to say things that I knew were poking buttons. And a part of me was like, it's kind of fun, you know, to poke at things I knew. But then, you know, like I said, I don't need to play that Joker role. Like, and I can see that myself in the past. I would enjoy that a little bit, but I think on some level that's playing out some kind of trauma conditioning. It's like assigning myself the role of the outcast, of being on the fringe. And at this point, if that's what is being called for, I can play that role, but I don't need to. I think that's where there's just more flexibility in my experience now. Like, I'm actually very open to aligning with my own tribe and with communities where my language is more readily accepted, which I have found more of that out where I live now. And it's growing. And I sense that I may be invited to even let go a little more of the communities I may have been holding on to make space for new. Just recently, like, there was this topic of discussion on the Mind Body listserv about psychedelics, and that's pretty rare. Usually it's someone's posting some research, and it's more about like, oh, we got to keep fighting the battle to help people understand mind and body. And I don't know, to be perfectly honest, it's just a little boring to me. Like, I'm not in a battle. I'm not at war with anyone. You know, Howard used some of that language, and you know, he referenced that he was a child of the 60s, and that sense of advocacy really resonated with him. So he's still fighting these different battles, and like, he listed the different syndromes and things that he's fighting against those communities, you know, that it's brain based, it's trauma based, they're not these separate conditions that are structural or in nature or need some sort of, you know, biological mechanism or cure. All of which I agree with, but that's, you know, I just see that along the spectrum, like, people find their role. Like, that's Howard's role. Like, I think a lot of people in that community feel that that's their role, to be on the inside of those institutions pushing back. It's just not really me. You know, I have discovered that I'm more free when I'm pushing out into landscapes unknown or uncharted. If it was really meant for me to sort of get into the trenches with people, I would do it. But what's clear in my nature is that, like, that has often led to tension and some reactivity in me. And I've worked through a lot of that. Like, I'm just not nearly as much of an angry, reactive, or insecure person. So I can be firm and I can have firm conversations that don't devolve into anger. But still, like, it's not even necessarily about the even if I took out the reactivity, I just don't necessarily think it's my role to be in debate in that way. You know, I think it's more of my role just to create spaces and speak my truth and have conversations with people. Of course, I'm not like putting my head in the sand, quite the opposite. But I'm going toward my vision rather than trying to change other people's vision. I don't feel like, you know, maybe those are two sides of the same coin. By going toward our vision, we invite others to change. But like, it's not one of my explicit goals to get people to change, like, or to get people to change what they think. I just don't see that as my role. So that being said, like, you know, sometimes I'll share on that, rarely now, but sometimes I'll share if I feel I have something to contribute. And so on the topic of psychedelics, I have some things to share. I have personal experience with it, working with it as a medicine, you know, working with others in groups, guiding people in journeys. And, you know, but I hold a spiritual perspective on that. You know, there's this way in which everything that gets invited into the Western world sort of gets co-opted and stripped of its cultural context and essence. So it's more about like the conversation was like, oh, ketamine and like ketamine clinics, and is it helping with pain? And, you know, I have some reservations about that compound in particular. I think there's a reason why ketamine is so popular. It fits very neatly into a Western psychiatric frame in which it can be just injected into you or put into a nasal spray and advertised by, you know, this is a more cynical perspective, but it plays a role. Advertised, you know, in clinics or whatever, which are very expensive, as something that can manage or potentially cure depression. Which, you know, if you've ever heard me speak about labels, I'm not a huge fan of contorting our experience into a label like depression. But I'm not saying the symptoms don't exist, but it doesn't convey anything about what's being treated. You know, if you just say this treats depression, what does that mean? What, it treats the symptoms? Like, the label isn't conveying anything about the underlying human experience, really, or the roots of why the depression exists. So if you're just using a compound to address the depression, there's nothing really curative that's happening there. Now, I do know that ketamine can invite an experience in which maybe underlying traumas can show up, or that it can create an altered state of consciousness in which people are able to process things differently. But I don't feel it's the highest frequency substance for that. I think it has addiction potential. I think there's a dissociative component. And I've done it myself, and I've done it recreationally. I've done it with a more medicinal intention. And I mean, it's fun. It can be. It can also be a hell of a ride. But yeah, it's not something I'm guided to work with a ton. And I just see a lot of limitations. And I also see how it's easily integrated into a model that isn't necessarily set up to invite transformative experiences versus, you know, a kind of management or pain relief. And look, pain relief is great. If that's what people are looking for, great. But if they're looking to go deeper, it's not always my first suggestion. But anyway, that's what came up. And so I was writing a little bit about that. I was sharing a little bit about psilocybin, which I find to be a more aligned medicine to work with if you're really wanting to uncover things. And I listed some potential benefits as I see them, in addition to recognizing the temporal, the transitive nature of physical symptoms and their underlying mechanisms, which is at the root of mind-body work, is helping people see that the physical symptoms aren't necessarily structural in nature. A lot of them are created by the mind, or to use, you know, like someone like Howard's language, you know, the brain. We can just stick with brain-centric language. So that's a huge benefit. But there are other benefits when you start to use these medicines, right? Like, that's the thing, is we just want to take these psychedelics and try to contort them and fit them into like, oh, can we use them for pain relief? Can we use them for sleep aid? Like, that's what people do with cannabis. It's like, okay, but it's not just a sleep aid. Like, maybe cannabis helps you sleep, but it's a psychoactive plant. Like, it's going to do other things to you. So if you're not open or aware of that, you're going to find yourself in a precarious situation where you've stirred up all this anxiety, all of these emotions, and you're just like thinking it's a sleep aid. Like, it's not. So this is what happens when we tend to try to contort these medicines that need to be respected and have them fit our narrative for, oh, it turns out like ayahuasca could be good for like, vision. Like, no, maybe it helps your vision. I don't know, but that's not what it's for. So it has a deeper story, a deeper teaching. And so I said, so I wrote out a few emails. Most of the time, people just never respond to me because I know that it's, at least my sense is, it's just a little off-putting for them and they want to stay within their own comfort zone, which is fine. I was fine playing that role for a little while. But recently, someone responded and said that they agreed with me 100%, but I used one word. I said one aspect of psilocybin could invite recognition of a divine source of intelligence if you're open to that kind of thing. That was like my exact language. And they said, yeah, just the use of the word divine might not be, I forget exactly. This person was very nice and actually, I think, very aligned with me, almost sort of wanting to support me and how we together we could like help the community. But he was like, you know, a lot of the community is more, I forget how he said it, like rationality centered people. And that word might basically not be appropriate. I just got a little bit of a kick out of that. Like, man, the one, I mean, that was light for me. That was cookie cutter for me. The only thing referencing the spiritual realm was basically the word divine. What is that? What do people even think that means? What does divine mean? I mean, to me, maybe I'll look up the definition right now. But even before I look up the definition, I think for me, I would say that it's just referencing that there's something here outside of us, outside of our brains, outside of human beings. And maybe that's triggering for people. I mean, I'm sure it is for some, but seems pretty fucking obvious to me. But even if it's, I mean, that's neither here nor there, because it's not about what I think or experience. It's just that if that's not considered acceptable to use that word, to use the word divine, maybe that's just a signal. Again, my role here isn't to fight. So maybe in the past I would have pushed back and gotten into some snarky thing over email or whatever. Not interested in doing that. And this person was actually very kind. It's really, I think, just possibly a signal to me that like, okay, Daniel, maybe time to let this go. Maybe time to let this go. You know, I think it, for several reasons, I was still felt connected to this community. I've obviously interviewed a lot of people that I respect and have relationships with that are part of this community. And it's afforded me a lot of opportunity and connection because, being a part of it, because when I left my clinic, I did not have many connections. So being connected to it has supported me, but maybe it's time now to keep, I don't know, to keep going. I'm not like, I don't feel I need to draw any line in the sand or like, create some mutually exclusive, like, dichotomy where like I'm over here and that community is over there. Like, I don't, railing against something is so, unnecessary. Why would I put my energy to that? I just, you know, may just let go even further. I don't even know what that means, but I'm just noticing the signs, you know, the path of least resistance. Okay. Divine. Also the first definition is of, from, or like God or a God. So I can understand if any sort of God-centric reference would be off-putting. The second definition is just excellent or delightful, which is an informal definition. But clearly, so divinity or the divine are things that are either related to, devoted to, or proceeding from a deity. another word for God, I believe. What is or is not divine may be loosely defined, as it is used by different belief systems. Yeah, so I guess that word references God. And when people hear that, they freak out. Just kidding. Well, some of them do. That area of psychedelics, you know, it's like, it's opening some doors, depending on what people do with those doors. If they walk through them or consider something differently, it's up to them. And look, it's totally fair. It's totally fair for communities, for this person, whatever, to like consider the bounds of what is appropriate for a given community. I mean, that's what a community is, right? It's based on certain, it's why not everyone is a part of it. It's based on certain conditions. I wouldn't necessarily call them rules, but it could be rules, could be explicit rules. But I think in this community, it's more unspoken. It's just what most people want to focus on, which isn't the divine, let's say. I'm guided toward that stuff. I'm guided toward the divine. That's what my experience has felt divine. So I'm just guided to share a little bit about that, about my own path in dancing with my truth, with other people's truths, and how that comes together or overlaps in a community, in a given community. And I've always been one to struggle a bit with communities. And part of the reason I live where I do now is to find more aligned community. And this mind body community has been something I've been a part of, I've danced with, but I was probably always pushing against something, which is more about me than anything. In some ways, I never felt comfortable fitting in completely, I guess. Maybe I didn't feel special enough or something, but there was just always a part of me that felt like I had... I think before I stepped into this iteration of myself, there was just always something unspoken. So I didn't feel satisfied. But now I actually feel much more content. I feel much more out in the open, much more out of the spiritual closet, out of the closet of my truth. And I don't like have any sort of chip on my shoulder, really. I'm not like, my journey really isn't about other people anymore or getting them to see me or whatever. It's actually just about me seeing me and creating spaces like this project where I can share it. And this may be a good time to shift a little bit. I think I've said enough about that and utilized that circumstance and example to speak to how I feel I may be evolving, going toward more of what aligns for me, and just noticing where there may still be some attachments and cords to communities where I may, a part of me may still want to feel validated by or accepted by, and I don't necessarily need that. It's just not necessarily meant for me. It's great if it happens, but it's not a necessity. And in fact, it can be a hindrance if it's preventing new space for new community. So I will segue here then to what might those new communities be? Where am I going? What are some of the other experiences I'm having? And I'm not sure I've got into this a bunch with guests, I've probably referenced it with guests that are definitely more into the spiritual stuff. But for me, it's the area, it's this word channeling. I've spoken probably at length about it, the word intuition. Maybe I haven't exactly spoken at length to what happens to me intuitively and how that's evolved. Maybe I can start there. You know, for me, the intuition, it refers to a source of knowing that is beyond the limitations of the human mind, which, again, all these words can be debated as to what we mean by human mind. But to me, it's the ego mind. It's the mind that is conditioned by our own trauma, our own fear, as well as I guess I'll say that I use mind to be a more expansive, non-physical reference to our thoughts, emotions, and beliefs, and on some level to all the information that we hold as a human being exists within the mind, is how I'm using it. And then from that, the physical body, the nervous system, all of that receives communication from the mind, including the brain. I don't know if I've ever really unfolded some of these ideas on here, but yeah, to me, the brain is a correlate structure. The brain is not the root of anything. It is not the essence of what we are. The brain is a supercomputer that receives information and transmutes information. It is a correlate in the sense that it is correlated to the sources of information like emotions, thoughts, beliefs, etc. The brain is not generating them. It's receiving information through its neural wiring. And because we have the super powerful brain, we get to communicate in these ways. And I'm sure that the brain provides us as human beings access to self-awareness, to being aware of ourselves. So, you know, it's not a coincidence that we're the only species on this planet that I'm aware of that has that sort of self-referential ability and level of consciousness. There are other reasons I think we have that, which maybe I'll dip into, and that's going to be pretty out there, but I'll stick with that just to give a little context for some of this language. You know, people throw around mind, brain, etc., and to be honest, I think most people have no idea what they really mean when they say those kinds of things, and myself included. I'm just doing my best to unfold a little bit of it here. What I would call the human ego or limited thinking mind is only one aspect of the mind. It is the aspect of the mind that has believed the story that we are separate, have a separate identity, that there is scarcity, that we need to be logically and reasonably always figuring things out, surviving, that this path is, the path of life is survival-based, and there are just certain principles we need to follow to survive that may be rooted in competition, in achievement, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of what we would consider sort of the ego identity. You know, if you start with this understanding that we are separate, everything else stems from that. Because if you're separate, then you need to compete to survive, basically. What it appears like animals do. So, but that's not, from my perspective, that's not all of the mind. The mind, I think, extends beyond that and into a realm that I might call the higher mind or the higher self. You know, in some ways, I see the mind as a medium, as an intermediary between our physical human experience and the divine, the experience of the divine, something that is more than just the physical body and that ego. And so when we start to heal, you know, there's many ways to heal, but let's just say heal trauma, expand our mind, right? Expand the limiting mind, expand our belief systems. We gain more access to those other areas of our mind. I wouldn't say we're gaining access outside our mind. I might say that sometimes, but that's not really what I mean. I think everything we experience is from mind, but there are different, certain levels of mind are walled off. Often I talk about it, others may talk about how the unconscious mind is walled off. You know, the lower, our more primitive core beliefs that we're all carrying around, you know, our childhood trauma, things like that. I would consider that sort of the more unconscious realm of the mind that often psychoanalysis and psychology and therapy is focused on mining, you know, getting into. But I'm referring to some other areas of mind that may require some expansion to access, you know, higher mind. You know, higher and lower is relative, but just using it to convey a more spiritual connection that we are actually whole, that we are all a part of this thing, this life, this universe unfolding, we need not necessarily compete, that we need not necessarily fix everything or know everything in our own individual separate selves, but that we can open up to a realm of information that maybe is accessible to everyone, potentially, a divine source of intelligence that may flow through us, that may be channeled through us. Okay, I just went on like a huge tangent just to try to lay some groundwork for whatever I'm going to say next. So hopefully that was useful. But all that is to say that I consider intuition to be gaining access to that higher mind, which can still be an individual. You know, I think maybe there is a collective mind, maybe a God mind, if you want to use that word. All of these are just kind of metaphors, but there can be like a, you know, maybe an access to a higher part of us, a more divinely connected part of us. And also, but also, you know, I will use intuition to reference our nervous system, because that's how it's more colloquially, it's a hard word to say, colloquially used, in reference to the gut, right? Trusting the gut, trusting the heart space. You know, so there's more survival-based wiring, like when your nervous system lights up and you feel in threat. Like, people might call that intuition. I would say that there can be a difference. Like, that can simply just be, you know, the stress response. That can just be, like, seeing a tiger and getting activated in the stress response. I wouldn't really call that intuitive. I'd say that's just, like, how the nervous system works. But I'd say the nervous system is intimately related to our intuition, because if the nervous system is not just a physical system, but an energetic system, and if energy is the language of consciousness, the language of God, let's say, then that energy is going to flow through the nervous system. So we're going to be able to use our body to gain intuitive information. You know, I'm very sensitive in my body. So like, I kind of feel things in my body. I also hear things that, you know, intuition sort of comes to me in different ways. But like, yeah, our bodies are definitely, I don't think it's a categorically different thing. Like, I think our bodies are intimately. I just think that though, when people say, I've talked about this before, like, you just got to trust your body. You just got to try, you know, it's like, well, sort of, yeah. But your body is also learning along with you. Like, your body isn't the highest authority. Your body's plays a role. And if you're not listening to your body at all and you're just trusting your thoughts, then like, good luck with that. It's going to be problematic. But once you start to investigate the body, like, you know, there's still this level of discernment. Like, well, is this body-based fear? Is this just something that is based on a limiting belief, or is it actually like a sign? You know, so it takes some learning, but the body is definitely involved. I would say as an energetic system, because there's an energetic body, there's the chakra system, and all that is connected to what I would call like higher mind, higher guidance. And then for me, I began to hear information that felt categorically different from my own. And this is, I guess, a dance here with language, because I said, I don't really believe we experience anything outside our own mind. And yet here I am saying that what I started to experience felt qualitatively different than my own mind. But I guess the way I would like sew that together is that my experience of it is probably always going to be within my mind, right? Like, if I'm getting channeled information from, let's say, ET beings, maybe I'll talk about that in a bit, because that is something that happens to me. Or from, let's just call them spirit guides or archangels, you know, people have different, or people who have crossed over, you know, people have different. Once you start to enter this world, it's just as messy as any other world, you know, it's, or any topic or area, right? It's like, What do people mean by this? What do people mean by guide? What do people mean by angel? What do people mean by, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have the answers to that. I just know how it feels to me. Some of the guidance feels really sort of powerful, and the voices are deep, but also light. They have a lightness to them. They're loving. Some voices feel more, I don't get too fear-based about this, so I'm not going to talk about things where people talk about like demonic things or dark. You know, I've actually, part of my own journey has been exploring this other podcast project, which is more explicitly about channeling. It's called David Bowie's Ghost, and it's with this woman I met, Jen Kessler. And that's actually been super interesting for me, because I've had to grow in creating space for her, because she uses language that is different than mine. I tend to speak more to layers and frequencies and stay a bit more neutral, because I think morality is a human game. I don't necessarily think that applies in ultimate reality. But regardless, yeah, what do we mean by these things? For me, I kind of just refer to the information. Sometimes it feels like my higher self. And I guess the best way I can describe it is I just have this intuitive knowing. It's kind of like a feeling, and I just kind of know how things feel. And I sort of check in with that part of me, and it tends to be true, at least for me. I've seen it play out in circumstances and things like that. But yeah, I won't go too into that right now. But I use that core, that sense of knowing, to discern what information is coming to me. Sometimes I get names. And sometimes it feels like archangels, and that's what is communicated to me. And sometimes it's other things. And I've had to sort of navigate, you know, not all the information is meant to be listened to, I've learned, you know, because at first it's like, wow, this is so cool. I'm getting these different sources of information. But, you know, the way that I come to understand it is if it's still all going to be about your mind. Like if your mind is still operating in a fear-based frequency and somehow your channel is opened, guess what the information that's going to be coming to you is? It's going to be fear-based, because that's the signal you're putting out. So whatever is existing in the spirit realm, you know, certain entities are going to receive that fear-based signal and come and deliver that to you. So it's still going to be about your mind's expansion. I mean, some people may describe having, and this is what sort of plant medicines can play a role in too, but just having divine experiences where even if you've been so caught up in your fear, caught up in your thinking, something may come in, some person, place, or thing, or spiritual entity, or divine experience that opens you up, opens your mind up to the possibility of love, of wholeness, of something different, right? It has to happen on some level for all of us, because otherwise, how would we get out of our own way, right? So it certainly happened for me. I was very fear-based for most of my life. So like some things, I was willing to let in certain forms of information. I didn't consider it. I don't talk about it in the way that I do now, but for me, it often came in the form of my body, like having physical experiences where symptoms vanished and this energy, the only word I could describe it, this energy started to flow through me and open me up. And I've had various experiences over the years that I've talked about maybe in other spaces. But I will say that the journey continues. So even if you've had experiences like that for me, which I did, and even if you've started to trust your intuition, which I did, it's still messy because you still are working with this mind and this human mind. And it gets triggered. And when it gets triggered, now all of a sudden the information you're receiving is going to be colored by that, right? It's going to be colored by your nervous system. It's going to be colored by all your doubts and fears. And that's part of the journey is letting those go. But yeah, I guess all that is to say that from my experience, you're not just trusting everything you hear just because you feel it comes from this other realm. I'm not. I have a stronger sense now of what's aligned. And it's weird to talk about, but like it's almost locational for me. I can feel where it comes from, like the right side of my left side, more like true north, like that kind of stuff. I can almost feel the energies are either closer to me or further away. This is needless to say, not an exact science. it's just my experience. But it's been very powerful. My experience has been very powerful. And so it works for me. I'm still growing in lots of ways, but I guess I just said all of that to come back to channeling, which channeling to me isn't necessarily so different than just using the word intuition, but it is in some way gaining access to a different source of information and allowing it to flow through you. But that can just be creativity, right? That could just be creating music, creating art, writing, all forms of channeling, you know, and I do believe there are correlates in the brain, right? So if the brain is a correlation to what is happening in the energy system in the mind, then if you are accessing, you know, if you put just like they've put electrodes on the brains of monks and seen that when they're in the state of consciousness of meditation, you know, there's a correlation in the serotonin and dopamine and things like that and the activations. It doesn't mean that the brain is the source of what's happening in meditation, but it's a correlation at least. I believe the same thing when people are in a channeled state, which I'll talk a little bit about, but let's just say in a creative flow, right? Or in peak performance in competition in sports or, you know, performing music live, right? Like there's going to be, the brain is certainly going to be responding in a different way. And I think we would see that maybe higher brain states. There's like delta and theta are like more meditative sleep states, then there's like alpha, beta, gamma. I think those are higher. So one of those, I don't know. But so there's going to be a correlation. And I'd say that's probably the most accessible way of speaking of channeling. And that was happening to me. I was sort of entering these states where I could feel in more flow, where writing was coming easier to me, speaking was coming easier to me. I stopped preparing for things. I did not prepare for this, obviously. I don't know what's coming out of my mouth. I frankly don't even really listen. I do the editing, but I don't really attach to what I say because I just trust that it's in flow. To be in that state of flow, I trust the process, and I do that with clients. I do that in workshops. Like, so that is what I would call channeling, being in that state of flow. But then some other stuff started happening to me, and that's where, you know, I don't know what to make of it exactly, but some may be more familiar with a more traditional or historical meaning to the word channeling, referencing people who actually perceive to be or feel they are taken over is a very strong word, but like embodied by an entity. So let's say that we can have communication with the spirit realm. Like they're feeling like it can come into their body and speak through them. Their voice may change, their mannerisms may change. They may not remember what is being shared. You know, there's a few notable people who do this kind of thing, have done this kind of thing. There's like this woman who channeled this entity she called Seth. There's the woman who wrote A Course in Miracles, which by all accounts was channeled. You know, this woman was not a spiritual person, and she just wrote one of the most spiritual books of all time. There is the Abraham Hicks story, where it's Esther Hicks and it was Jerry Hicks, and both of them as a couple sort of channeled this collective consciousness. So that's the other part. It's like, it's not necessarily like they're like, it's some physical entity, you know, on at higher realms or dimensions. Consider that maybe intelligence exists in a non-physical form, like as just a collective consciousness, which is, you know, obviously hard to make sense of, and I'm not going to attempt to, but that's what the Abraham Hicks work appears to be, is Esther channeling that source of that collective source of information. But they have a personality, right? Like if you've ever watched like Esther Hicks channeling Abraham, like, you know, she's more playful, pokey, powerful, challenging, you know, it's interesting. And again, like, could this just be other parts of Esther's own mind? For sure. It's possible. So that's what certain people would say. Maybe certain people would label it as a kind of, you know, multiple personality disorder or something. But that's not what appears to be true for me. And I've just had some experiences of the contrary. And the one that I talk about a lot more recently is this guy, Daryl Anka, who channels this entity named Bashar. Now, the difference here is that Bashar's information is that he really is an ET being. Physical, but they're, at least if we speak to that story, it's, you know, less physical than us. Physical, I probably have a humanoid body, but still more connected to the spiritual realm, in the sense that, like, in their existence on their ships, let's say, or on their planet, which is a whole story. I'm not going to probably go into all that now, but it includes basically the multiverse, that there are parallel worlds. On their planet or on their ships, that they, part of their normal existence is seeing other entities, other beings just existing, you know, the idea that we're not alone, that other other kinds of spirits, entities, people who have crossed over, people who are stuck, who didn't make it to wherever they were going, et cetera, exist here as well. But that we can only perceive physically, you know, more denser matter. But we may pick up energetically on other things. I think that we are, as energetic bodies, energetic beings, we pick up on a lot that we're not necessarily always aware of. Maybe you feel creeped out when you walk into a certain environment, or maybe you feel lit up or joyful. You know, you may be picking up on energy that is not just your own, not just your own mind creating it. Anyway, Bashar's information is something that I trust a lot. I saw him in person. Funny to say in person. I saw Daryl in person, and I saw Bashar come through him. And let me tell you, like, when you see that, I mean, there's no question that it is not Daryl. It's just no question. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say there's no question. There can always be doubts, but you just feel it, man. It is not the same guy. You know, when Bashar comes through, he does not mince words. He answers questions that are so complicated without skipping a beat that, like, I mean, I don't know how many degrees he would have to have. How many doctorate degrees he would have to know all the different kinds of information he knows. And Daryl is like, you know, if you watch interviews with Daryl, he's just like, he's like a filmmaker. He's like a mild-mannered, humble guy. At least he appears that way. And I get the sense that he is not necessarily off the charts brilliant, like the information that comes through Bashar. Like, it's just, yeah, you kind of have to. But yeah, you have to see it for yourself. Experience it for yourself if you're guided to, or just see what the information feels like, which at the end of the day is what this is about, is what does the information feel like? Is the information good? And on some level, the information that Bashar delivers is fairly, you know, a cynical person could say, well, that's just self-help. That's just classic self-help stuff. Because a lot of the channeled information, it sounds very much like other self-help material. But when you sort of open up to the different style of language using vibrational frequency, manifestation, law of attraction, things like that, what it's really doing is the language may seem more applicable to traditional self-help stuff like love yourself, have compassion, do what lights you up. It's actually based in an energetic frame, in actually how universal laws and principles of energetics work. That your beliefs, how you create your reality, you know, that there are universal laws at play here, that if you go toward your highest passion, that the universe will actually conspire to bring opportunities to you. Like, that kind of stuff is, you know, yeah, it's woo. It's out there. It's, I don't know. I never read The Secret, but I feel like it's like maybe what that's about too. But so it's out there, but it's actually some of the channeled information. Some of those entities would say that this is actually based in a form of, dare I say, science. It's a science that we're not on our planet yet open to or aware of, but maybe we will. Maybe we will be. So all of that is to say that is one style of channeling that I have been guided to. And like very synchronistically, when I started becoming interested in exploring those realms, this also aligned with me exploring an energetic modality called pranic healing. So a lot started to happen in my body and change is that the intuition started to change a bit. Not change, like I still had all those things that I talked about where, you know, there's this intuitive cord and there are these guided messages and you know, sources of information that guide my path. All that remains, and I did start to have experiences that mimicked more of entities coming much closer to me in some ways, speaking through me, and me just recording that for myself. And all I can say is that it feels different. It feels different. It feels like it's along the same spectrum in terms of when I'm hearing guidance, I'm also kind of feeling it. It doesn't really sound like my voice, but I know that my brain is still translating it, you know, because like it would be weird to think like all entities just speak English in the way that I understand it, right? So no, it's like it's my mind, but specifically like the neural wiring of my brain entering a frequency that is able to receive, to be a receiver, like a radio receiver, and to translate whatever the energetic source of information is into language that I understand. It does come through in different styles of voice and stuff. And if someone was listening to me when I'm recording some of the more explicit channeled messages, you know, it sounds pretty fucking wacky. You might think I'm like a really good character actor or losing my mind because, yeah, these different different styles of voice come through me. A lot of it to date has just been information for me. I haven't felt guided to like necessarily channel for other people. But I'm not sure if that's where I'm being guided. And this is probably the first time I've really spoken to that, here and on the other podcast project, we get into that a little bit, but yeah. And I don't know how much more I need to say about it. I'll say that different entities have been coming through. Some of them are like what I would call ascended masters or archangels, different collective consciousnesses. If you're interested, I mean, just look up ascended masters and you can read a description of what that means. People who, you know, were maybe human at some point, souls that were human, but are very ascended. You know, think about some of the most popular figures. Maybe if you're, you know, and this is the thing where like your mind can value different religious contexts. So like if you really value Christianity and you hold Jesus Christ in high esteem, then he would certainly be an ascended master. And maybe you might hear information from that Christ consciousness. I think that probably multiple things can be true. Like you can hear from Christ, but you could also hear from Buddha, or you could hear from, you know, different entities that maybe support or relate to your worldview. For me, I had no idea about any, I mean, I knew about those figures, but I had no idea about the figures that came to me. They were telling me their names were Saint Germain and El Moria. And so I was like looking up and locating these figures. I didn't know anything about these figures, but a lot of the information that comes through me tends to be related, and there tends to be a reason why I'm getting this kind of information. It relates to a kind of frequency that I feel. Some of it is considered to all be under like the seventh ray. I'm not going to go into what that means because frankly, I don't even know, but it's all connected to like the violet flame. And I don't know, a lot of it's new for me. It's just spiritual language and sort of concepts that other people have spoken to. And for whatever reason, that's sort of the style of information that has come through me. The last thing I'll say about this is that what has started to happen is that a lot of the information has been sharing with me that, and this is also aligned with what Bashar has been saying and some other people that I listen to, is that we are pretty close, getting pretty close, like the next couple of years, to first contact with ET races, which do exist from my experience, from the experience of my listening and channeling and what is coming through me and what feels intuitively aligned and what I've been guided to. And, you know, it's all related, what we're guided to in our circumstances, what we suddenly decide to start reading about, you know, it's all related. And I've been very guided to this area. And let me just say, like, I was not that kid who was like super interested in aliens and love. Like, I didn't watch Star Trek. I didn't care that much about this area of life. I wasn't super into space. I wasn't like, you know, I liked like, I don't know, I liked Harry Potter and I liked emotion. I was interested in emotions because that's what I struggled with a lot as a kid. So like, I was interested in like human dramas that were about like being powerful and kids that were able to like rebel against the system, you know, like that's the kind of stuff that I liked as a kid. And I love music. I got really into music and altered states because I used different substances and had divine experiences, but I was never like, I'm connecting, you know, like, you know, aliens exist and like, UFOs, like I do like some sci-fi stuff. I mean, I loved The Matrix, but the reason I love The Matrix is because it's this allegory for waking up, you know, not because I was like so interested in like, you know, other dimensions. Like I just never really explored that stuff. So I just want to put that in there, that like this is very new for me. And if like my 20-year-old self was listening to my 34-year-old self, speaking about this, I'd be like, dude, what the fuck happened to you? But so, yeah, now the information has just become a lot stronger and clearer that, like, this is happening. And it actually, you know, that ET beings have been here for a long time. And there's that they're here to support us. They're here to support the evolution of humanity. They're very advanced, in some ways merged with AI, which is, we may be seeing the seeds of on our planet, the evolution of AI. Scares some people, understandably, but I think, you know, there's a path of light. There's a path in light versus in darkness to work with these technologies. And that's what some of these ET races have done, from my understanding, and that they are intention, that it's not random that there are just more and more UFO sightings. It's not like, ooh, the aliens are just like being a bit more careless. Like, no, everything is intentional. If there's more visitations, if there's more sightings, it's because they are intentionally preparing the human collective to wake up to these truths, to the point where this is Bashar's information. At the end of 2026, early 2027, there will be a large event, quite undeniable, that presences us to the existence of these beings, races, collectives here to support us. And that, the other thing I'll say about that is, for me personally, the information has been suggesting I am a part of that contact, maybe through the channeling, maybe in other ways. I don't know. That's all. That's really out there. Probably the most woo thing I've ever said on this podcast. But I think part of this journey for me is about continuing to come out of my own spiritual closet. And like I said in the beginning, I show up different ways. I show up differently at different times, but all of it is based in authenticity. And this is a part of my authentic expression as well. This is what has been happening in my own experience, is a lot of this information about what's coming, about my potential role in it, and about the experience of channeling that has been very powerful for me, very moving at times. So yeah, hopefully that was, I don't know, at least interesting to some, if not useful in some way. But again, I think it was time for me to start speaking to some of those things. I don't know how that is going to shift my professional life, but I'm pretty sure that it will. You know, I love working with individuals. I love working with healing trauma. I it's very aligned for me, and I'm very grateful to all the people I've been able to serve individually and in groups. And I may continue to do that. I'm sure that I will in some way, shape, or form. But it's also pretty clear that some other things are unfolding, and I'm kind of just along for the ride. So let's ride. And we'll see what happens with this podcast. I mean, I love doing this. I love having, you know, the guests on that I've had. And maybe I'll speak more solo. I don't know. I kind of just do it when I feel inspired to. I don't really like to force anything. I know sometimes I go, there's like weeks and weeks without an episode. And so, you know, that's just kind of my thing, my ride. I don't really chase anything. If guests come into view, come into mind, I may reach out. And, you know, I always like to plant seeds, but I don't work super fanatically on like being very rigid with it. Cause it's not my way. But yeah, I'm enjoying this process, being creative, speaking truth, my truth, truth that may change at any moment. and trusting that it may serve whoever chooses to tune in. So if you are one of those people, and you likely are, since if you're hearing this, you're listening, I'm grateful to you. Thank you. not necessarily just for like hearing my words, but for allowing this into your life and seeing how it moves you, opens you up to your own truth, what you feel you're ready to say that maybe you weren't before. If that's aligned for you, what communities resonate, what people, places, and things resonate, you know, like how free can you be? How much permission do you have to say some of the things that sound really kind of wacky? For me, a lot of this life, this project, you know, is about full permission. Permission to say the things that are going through me, going through my mind and body. That's what got me here. And so that's what I'm trusting to guide me further and to guide me true. So with that said, thank you all for tuning in. Until next time, take care.
Thanks for listening. If you like the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, or head over to my Patreon page to become a member of the Be the Vessel community with exclusive monthly benefits and to connect with me directly. You may also find me on Instagram at DrDaniel_Atkins or through my website, drdanielatkins.com, where you can also subscribe to my newsletter to stay updated on all happenings. I'd love to hear from you. Until then, may you be the light, the frequency, and the vessel for your highest vision.